Chalokadipati Sahampati Katanjali Anati Varangaya Chata Santi Tasata Tarajaka Jatika Desi Tridamang Anukampi Mantajan.
Tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. As we develop meditation, and whether it's a metta bhavana, the development of loving kindness, or other kinds of meditation. Something that we always have to develop skill in dealing with are the what are called hindrances in Pali, Nivarana. And also it's something that we, you know, we need to be attentive to. Not just in meditation, but in through daily life, through our interactions with people, whether we're walking, sitting, standing, lying down, it's that we need to be aware of how these hindrances overwhelm the mind or obscure the mind. And the hindrances that the Buddha pointed to are pointed to certain aspects of things as a hindrance, sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt, skeptical doubt. So that these are particular qualities that undermine the goodness of the mind, undermine the steadiness of the mind, the clarity of the mind, so that becoming aware of something as a hindrance. Particularly in the context of cultivation of the meditations on loving kindness, when ill will, anger, irritation, aversion, negativity arise in the mind, then there should be sort of an immediate flag going up saying, aha, this is a hindrance, rather than that schmuck. You know, how could they do that? You know, sort of the immediate belief in the whole thing, the whole construct of negativity, and rather that sense of, oh, this is a hindrance. Okay, now how do I work with it? How do I deal with it? And again, one of the important foundations of dealing with the hindrances is really tuning into the body, really recognizing, well, what does the body feel like when there is sensual desire? Where does it, what is it, is it, where does one feel it? How does it make the body feel? The kind of excitement, the rush, the anticipation, the kind of leaning into, the kind of the hope of gratification. And how does the body, what's the body feel like with ill will, negativity, aversion? Well, that kind of feeling of on edge, of tightening, of tensing. The sense there's an energy. It energizes us. Because it's not a very wonderful kind of energy, but it's sometimes it's better than nothing if you're looking for something to get energized with. It seems like there's nothing better than a good rant, you know, to sort of clear out the pipes. But then it leaves one not just oneself. there's debris everywhere. Sloth and torpor. Again, what does it feel like in the body? What's the general tone? Listlessness, dullness, restlessness, worry, that kind of agitation that one feels. It isn't just a mental event. The body is involved in this as well. Doubt, a kind of uncertainty, hesitation, inability to sort of move forward, that pulling back. So those are things that one feels in the body, and sort of learning how to be attentive to the experience of that as a whole body-mind process. As we cultivate that mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of the body, it starts to become a bit clearer. Okay, what am I actually feeling? And then to be able to, again, that sense of, oh, this is a hindrance. Rather than sort of feeling out of sorts, feeling uncomfortable, and then looking for something either external to blame or internal, blaming oneself, but this sort of, oh, this is what I'm feeling. And then working with that, okay, breathing through it, bringing attention and awareness, bringing up something skillful and wholesome to work with. That's one of the discourses of the Buddha. The Buddha, it actually begins with Ananda. Ananda going and visiting a group of nuns, and there's an exchange concerning the practice of the nuns and the nuns developing. A group of nuns having particularly good progress in the cultivation of meditation and training. And Ananda comes and tells the Buddha, and then the Buddha gives a discourse, both approving of the practice, but then also sort of filling it out in the sense of in the cultivation of mindfulness and meditation, the necessity to direct the mind to something that uplifts the mind. Say when the mind is scattered or diffuse or is overwhelmed by dullness or torpor, to direct attention to something that is uplifting, that is pleasurable. The word in Pali is pasadaniya nimitta, sort of nimitta, a sign of the pleasurable or something satisfying. I was thinking of that, particularly with the as we're directing attention to metta bhavana, the cultivation of loving kindness. That's a particularly pleasurable sign. It's a particularly pleasurable object of attention to direct the mind to. And it isn't necessarily just for the overcoming of ill will and aversion, but it's also, it can be very helpful for the, with sloth and torpor, mind is dull. Well, direct the mind to something that is pleasurable, that the mind can take interest in. Because usually why we get trapped into sloth and torpor is because we're not interested in, or not sufficiently interested in the something as boring and neutral as the breath. there's the object of loving kindness, and that's very pleasurable, restlessness and worry. Have the mind that is kind of fidgety and agitated or worried, anxious about this or that, and it'll latch onto anything because it's quite happy to worry about anything. But give the mind something pleasurable. Give the mind something that it can take some satisfaction in hanging out with, so hanging out with loving kindness, and allow the mind to churn. If it's going to churn, let it churn with something that is really skillful. Give it something that's pleasurable, rather than either kind of coming at it with a kind of in Buddhist teachings, and the Buddha himself, in a sense, sometimes the language can be a warrior kind of language. The Buddha was a warrior, and so there was a he used those images, but that isn't what he used all the time. So this is actually a very good example of the different ways that the Buddha approached the the practice and say, well, here's just a different way. Or it's also sometimes the just be mindful. You know, it's all going to work out. You know, just have to be mindful, just gently bring the mind back to the object with an impartial observer. Usually it's not an impartial observer anyway. that's a fallacy. we've got our issues and agendas going all the time, whether we're aware of them or not. So really consciously bringing attention to something that is wholesome, skillful, pleasurable, satisfying to the mind, so that the restlessness or same with doubt, wavering, so uncertainty, on a certain level, one knows that doubt is a it's unskillful, and one can. It's hard to convince oneself to be doubting and wavering that loving kindness is a good thing. I mean, it's you got to work at it. So it's a skillful way of bringing up. I think one of the hindrances is one probably needs to be a bit circumspect with feeding sensual desire with pleasurable objects. Sometimes not a good idea. we're pretty good at that already. That being said, it can also, if one's attentive, one can also be addressing that tendency to, say, to sensual desire and take it to a whole other level of why fixate on that which is gratifying to me, pleasurable to me, and just say, oh, there's so much suffering in this. And just bring it up to a level of loving kindness. And the kindest thing is to not being trapped in that kind of illusion of pleasure and gratification. So there's ways of working with it that are very useful. So that directing of attention to a pleasurable object, pasadinya nimitta, something satisfying. So these aspects of the hindrances are it's a very fruitful realm of investigation and actually a very necessary foundation to be laying for one's practice as we continue to cultivate. We need to be more and more skilled and more and more, say, quick at noticing is that a hindrance? Is that an obstruction to that which is truly skillful? Because in another discourse, the Buddha points to the hindrances as being the fuel or the nourishment for ignorance, avijja. And in the Buddhist structure of things, it's sort of that kind of ignorance, not understanding, not knowing the true nature of things, is the kind of the ground that all suffering arises out of. But that ignorance or that not knowing of truth is not something that is sort of immutable, indivisible, fixed aspect of the mind, but it comes into being, fed and nourished by certain conditions, and those conditions that feed it and nurture it are the five hindrances. That's what the Buddha points to. If we're working with those five hindrances, we're very directly undermining that fundamental tendency towards avijja, ignorance, unawareness, lack of true knowledge. So that as we practice through the day, sitting meditation, walking meditation, attending to an awareness or an attention to, is there a hindrance? Is that particular thought, mood, perception, feeling, are these, is that, could that be a hindrance? If it is, how to work with it? Grounding it in the awareness of the body, when the Buddha describes the hindrances, he points to when we're able to relinquish them, and the mind, there's this interest and willingness to relinquish and to let go of things, is where the mind is able to become more peaceful, more settled. When we're able to relinquish the hindrance, there's a joy, a sense of well-being, satisfaction that comes up in the mind. And the Buddha gives images to illustrate that in that day. So that for one who is overwhelmed by the hindrance of sensual desire, and the Buddha compares it to somebody who is in debt. So that when, because with, say, with sensual desire, then there's always something. And so it's like this with when there's a debt, when one's in debt, then there's a concern that's always there, so that the mind isn't able to come to a place of ease. But when one has paid off one's debts, then there's a sense of happiness and well-being, a sense of joy that arises. It's quite natural. I think anybody who's ever finally paid off their mortgage, and they're, wow, I feel so good. You know? So that there's a sense of that sense of well-being when that's abandoned and let go of. That is there's a happiness that arises. Ill will is compared to somebody who is sick, has fever, food doesn't agree with them, nothing tastes good. It's uncomfortable. As long as that fever or that illness is there, then one doesn't really, one feels out of sorts, one feels uncomfortable. But when that sickness goes away, then food tastes good, the world looks better again, there's a sense of happiness and well-being that arises. So that relinquishing of ill will, the abandoning of ill will and aversion, it feels good. The sloth and torpor, that kind of dullness, drowsiness that overtakes the mind. The Buddha compares it to somebody who is in prison, and that they're an ordinary person is put in prison. He doesn't have access to family. He doesn't have access to his resources, there's a great sense of loss, suffering that's there. But if that person were released from prison, his property restored, his connection with family were there again, then that person would feel extremely happy, and there'd be a sense of ease and well-being. So similarly, one who is able to relinquish and abandon that sloth and torpor, that there's a sense of ease and well-being that comes. The restlessness and worry, the Buddha compares to, suppose someone were a slave. If they were a slave, they're not able to go where they want, do what they want. They're not masters of themselves. And if they were granted their freedom and able to be independent and go where they wanted, do what they wanted, they would feel happiness and well-being. So in the same way, this relinquishing of restlessness and worry, a tremendous sense of well-being. One realizes how kind of a slave to that restlessness, agitation, worry. If we're not worrying about something in particular, then we're worrying about what's the next thing we can worry about. So it's and to be able to put that all down and say, okay, there's just this body and this mind, there's this peace and awareness. Okay, well, that's a different world. The doubt, skeptical doubt, the Buddha compares it to somebody who is who has property, who has possessions, and they have to travel through a desert or a wilderness area that is fraught with dangers and robbers and whatnot. And if they made a safe passage through that stretch of desert or that stretch of wilderness, and they got to their destination, and they still had their property, and then they would feel happy and they would experience a joy and well-being. So in the same way that relinquishing, while one is still trapped in doubt, everything is fraught with danger, fraught with difficulty, fraught with uncertainty. What's going to happen? But by relinquishing, by being able to relinquish that, that doubt, then one is there's a sense of safety, of refuge, of certainty that arises. So that working with these hindrances, there are many tools to be using, but I think particularly, say during this retreat, really experimenting with the application of loving kindness. See how it how it fits, how it's able to work as a means for undermining the hindrances, really using that. Because the intrinsic to say the heart of loving kindness is a sense of its wholesomeness. It's these are very beautiful states of mind, and one can direct attention to that and have confidence. Okay, oh yeah, this is a wholesome state of mind. It's like with in the cultivation of more refined states of mind, as one relinquishes the hindrances, then the mind has a sense of a brightness and stability. And like in the classical description of the first jhana, the mind is withdrawn from, say, sensual desires, withdrawn from unwholesome states of mind, and with through the strength of that withdrawal, seclusion, I'd say that delighting in seclusion, the seclusion from the agitation of sensual desire, that gravitation towards gratification, and the seclusion from unwholesome states of aversion, ill will, doubt, restlessness, sloth and torpor, then the mind is able to settle. And one needs to work at it to a certain extent, in the sense of one of the descriptions that the Buddha gives is as a, he gives it as a bathman or a bathman's apprentice, and taking the say in the Buddha's time they used a kind of a clay for soap or something, and you'd take that ball of clay and you'd wet it and you'd knead it, and then it would permeate and pervade, sort of suffuse and fill that ball of clay, so that it's neither too wet, but it's completely pervades that ball of clay, so it doesn't drip, so it's the consistency is really good. It's completely pervading this ball of clay and creating a ball of clay, and that's what one would use to rub on oneself if one were in a bath in the Buddha's time, and say the meditator does the same thing with their body and mind, and it's interesting that the Buddha points to the body, is that it permeates and pervades, suffuses and fills his body with the delight in seclusion, the seclusion from sensual desire, the seclusion from unwholesome states, so that one really attending to that feeling of seclusion, and that the mind is able to be present with the breath as it comes in, the breath as it goes out, the body as it's sitting, relaxing, really permeating and pervading, suffusing and filling the breath, the body, the mind with this quality of loving kindness. Drawing back, relinquishing these five hindrances, and this is a present moment practice. As one breathes in, there's that sense of, okay, permeating, pervading, suffusing and filling. As one breathes out, allowing that sense to fill the body and the mind, allowing loving kindness, that's thoughts, the feeling of well-wishing, feeling of kindness, the feeling of warmth, allowing that to fill the body, allowing it to fill the mind. Recognizing if there are any hindrances that arise, if there's sensual desire, if there's ill will, if there's sloth and torpor, if there's restlessness, if there's doubt, rather than it being a sort of an enemy that is coming to attack one, and one gears up to sort of annihilate and destroy it, get into conflict with it, just having that base of loving kindness. It's okay. How do I work with this? This is not to my benefit. It's not for my well-being. How do I? It's a skillful way of relinquishing. It's a skillful way of letting this go, letting it pass through, so that there. And then from that, you can be as sort of innovative as one wants with sensual desire. They say, like, the classic advice for relinquishing sensual desire is contemplations of the body, the unattractive nature of the body. And oftentimes that can be picked up with aversion, sort of thing. The repugnant nature of the body. And I say, well, why does it have to be like that? Well, this is a loving kindness, and sort of saying, yeah, what's the point in this constant attraction in something that is always breaking down? It's never comfortable. Why do I keep trying to make it happy? I mean, give up, you know. there's a kindness there. You say, okay, I can let that go. Let that go. There's a real. And then the resonance that's left in the mind is very, it's very bright. Aversion and ill will, rather than being fearful and averse to the ill will and negativity, and sort of this. Approach it with a sense of kindness. Okay, that aversion, that ill will. I mean, that's why do I set myself up in opposition to this? Why do I argue? Why do I keep getting into arguments with this? So, and it's even if one actually won the argument, you still have, this is the sort of resonance of having got into an argument with oneself over some aversion and ill will and petty squabble that one's maintained in one's mind. So, I can let that go. It's sloth and torpor. And this bringing a sense of kindness to working with the. Sometimes we can get really frustrated with with sloth and torpor, mind is dull. Or we get very idealistic, you know, I should be able to sit and not have these intrusions of of dullness. But with a sense of kindness, a sense of that sort of metta, you know, it doesn't. One of the things is that's really important to understand is that, say, like, loving kindness is not acquiescing to everything and saying, oh, everything's fine. Oh, this sloth and torpor, isn't it lovely and wonderful? You know, it's sort of, you know, or isn't this, you know, aggressive, obnoxious person? You know, aren't they nice, you know? But it's, no, I mean, one doesn't have to acquiesce. But one doesn't have to get caught up in aversion. One doesn't have to get trapped by that negativity. So that sloth and torpor, we actually conserve a lot of energy by not, you know, not fighting with sloth and torpor. But skillfully recognizing, well, what's a skillful way of working with this? Because sometimes it's a real kindness, just rather than sort of idealistically sitting and struggling, just get up and stand, you know? Go and do some walking meditation. I mean, those are sit with one's eyes open. Sit with one's eyes open. Do real meditators do that? You know, I said, well, why not? Yes. No, it's just the sense of you know, it can be a very simple thing that gives energy. It's like sitting with one's eyes open. It can energize, you know, and pass through that period of sloth and torpor, and then it's fairly simple. But say one does have to have the kind of kindness to oneself to kind of allow that. As we tend not to. Restlessness and worry. That's where it's really helpful to be tuning into the body, and because when the mind is really restless, then it's looking for anything, you know, moving around. That really that permeating and pervading, suffusing and filling the body with that. That quality of loving kindness, breathing in, breathing out, tuning into the rhythm of the body, the feeling of the energy through the body. And even if it's a restless energy, allowing to be very conscious of that permeating and pervading, suffusing and filling with that sense of turning attention to, say, non-desire and stepping away from any unwholesome states, negativity, aversion, seclusion, so that one, and find a place in the body that does feel comfortable. Again, that sense of that pasadaniya nimitta, finding an object that is pleasurable or satisfying. So, you know, maybe there's chest is restless or stomach is, there's this agitation. I say, well, what about my hands? Can I just relax my hands? Can I make that a pleasurable sensation? Allowing that. I mean, it's just picking a spot and then seeing that one can, you know, suffuse that that particular area with a feeling of well-being, seclusion from the unwholesome. And then that, from that, you've got a base, and you can work that to pervade the other areas of the body. So it's like working with that image of the bathman or bathman's apprentice. It's a really lovely image, and it's very much body based. and of course, we do have a mind in this in this body as well. And so we're quite directly affecting the mind without, say, getting entangled in it. The seclusion from the mind itself sometimes. Okay, the mind is going off in its particular tangent. Say doubt, okay, there's doubting about this, doubting about that uncertainty. I say, well, why do I have to make a decision? Why do I have to even have a particular opinion or view about whether it's right or wrong? Is it just, there is just this breath, there's just this sensation of the body, breathing in, breathing out. A great act of kindness. So that using of that theme of the five hindrances and the application of loving kindness, not just as a theory or as a mental state, but working it into the, seeing how it does actually pervade the rest of our practice. And it's not just about meditation, because it isn't as if you come into the meditation hall and the five hindrances appear. this is a life skill. So getting to familiar with this and recognizing, and also, say, the more skillful we are in working with and aware of how those five hindrances work and how one can relinquish them, when we do come to sit, then the mind is able to settle much more quickly. So I'll offer that for reflection today.